Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Clay Masters. There's been a lot of attention in the last 5 or 6 years surrounding water quality. Last year, a federal judge dismissed the Des Moines Waterworks lawsuit against drainage districts in 3 northern Iowa counties. The utility had claimed the districts were funneling high levels of nitrates into the Raccoon River, a major source of drinking water for 500,000 Iowans. And earlier this year, Governor Kim Reynolds signed a bill she called monumental, which allocates $282 million for water quality projects in the state. On April 23rd, I hosted a conversation at Buena Vista University in Storm Lake to discuss water quality issues. My guests were Tom Eisenhart with Iowa State University. Tom is a co-leader of the science team at ISU that developed the science assessment for the nutrient reduction strategy. Art Cullen, editor at the Storm Lake Times. Cullen won a Pulitzer Prize for his editorial writing last year for challenging powerful agricultural interests in Iowa. Mary Skopik, executive director of Iowa Lakeside Laboratory. She is based in Spirit Lake and comes to the University of Iowa from the DNR, where she has held several positions within the Watershed Monitoring and Assessment section. And Adam Keel with the Iowa Soybean Association. Keel is operations manager with Iowa Soybean's Environmental Programs and Services team and works with farmers across the state in implementing water quality practices on their land. I asked each of them what they thought was the biggest challenge for water quality in the state.
All right. Well, Clay, anticipating that that might be the question, I'll offer that I used a crutch and that I'm an instructor at Iowa State University. I teach there as well. And so one of the courses I was teaching this morning was in natural resources and agriculture. So it was students that were growing up in production agriculture and want to stay in that career here in Iowa. And so I asked them that question this morning. What do you think the biggest issue is? To a person, that they all identified that it's issues with nutrients and sediment that are coming from their lands, from our agricultural lands. But what I'm encouraged about, and I like to think that when I work with those students, is that the future is bright, because they all recognized and took ownership that the issue was theirs. And really what they were looking for is that they were looking for what can they do? What answers can they provide? What management can I implement? So I'm going to echo theirs. I'm going to echo the future, that those are some of the greatest issues that we currently have.
All right, Art Cullen.
Well, the reason I'm sitting here is because we won the Pulitzer, as you noted, for our coverage of the Des Moines Waterworks lawsuit involving Buena Vista, Sac, and Calhoun counties. It occurred to me after we had done all these editorials, and it was mainly about transparency and how the lawsuit was funded by the counties. The counties were funded by commodity groups and the Agribusiness Association of Iowa. Excuse me. And many of the donor names were kept secret. And so we appealed to reveal who those donors were. And it resulted in the county eventually divorcing itself from this funding agreement with the Agribusiness Association of Iowa. But it also allowed us to kind of delve into the idea of water quality issues in Iowa. And it occurred to me that the real issue that precipitated, if you will, the Des Moines Waterworks lawsuit is climate change. Nature is telling us we're bucking up against our limits.
Okay, Adam Keel, biggest issue facing water quality in the state?
I thought about this a little bit, like Tom did beforehand, and I think the biggest issue facing Iowa water is the human issue. I think we need more people on the landscape working with farmers, developing solutions. Right now we've got people working on the landscape administering our watershed projects that are kind of temporary in nature. Oftentimes don't even have benefits like many of us do on this panel. So I think we need to support the human resources to get out in the landscape and work with farmers and landowners to get things done.
Mary?
All right, well, I'm going to jump off where Art did and talk about, if you close your eyes and think about Iowa 300 years ago, we had vast prairies along the landscape. And when it rained, that water absorbed into the land. It was moving through groundwater. It was really very slowly moving. And as we've changed that land use, now that water moves mostly over the surface. It picks up things like the sediment and nutrients and bacteria that have been referenced. So I think it's really about how we manage the water. I think how that water is moving off the landscape is the biggest issue, and we really need to address that.
Okay, so where do we go from here? Tom, the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy that was something that was implemented a number of years ago by former Governor Terry Branstad, along with the Iowa DNR and ISU, did some work on that as well. What would you say as far as buy-in goes when you look at how many people are doing these kinds of practices? And we're talking about buffer strips and cover crops and just having the tools to be able to do this.
Sure, yeah. So the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy was an outgrowth of the Hypoxia Action Plan that asked states to develop strategies for how they would achieve the goals for reducing nitrogen and phosphorus to the Gulf of Mexico from the Mississippi River states. And so we looked at the science and said, okay, well, let's look at nitrogen and phosphorus because they moved differently. What do we have for practices that can be infield, edge of field, and then land cover change?
Brief synopsis of those things.
So infield things would be like nutrient management, would be changes in tillage, cover, and landscape change would be implementing perennial vegetation in specific locations. And edge of field are those at the edge of the tile drains, where we're really a nitrate-focused practice, where we're looking at nutrient removal wetlands and working with bioreactors and saturated buffers. So it's really a good news, bad news thing. You know, one of the things that we saw and that we came up with some estimates that it is achievable. We can achieve those goals of the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy and the Hypoxia Action Plan, but it requires significant level of implementation. So we have a long ways to go, but the good news is that we are off to a start. We annually provide a summary of people, resources, and land that has been changed, practices that have been implemented, and that's available on the website. And so we have had significant changes, but we have a long, long ways to go for implementation.
And Adam, what are you hearing from farmers as far as willingness to do these kinds of things?
Yeah, so we really focus on priority watersheds and not try to work in the whole state, but address certain watersheds that are of priority concern. And in those watersheds where you have the people, you have the resources, there is higher levels of implementation of these practices that Tom talks about. Unfortunately, it's not widespread across the state right now, but these watersheds where we are focusing our efforts, we do see promising results both in terms of practices, but then in terms of the monitoring that we're doing to actually realize that there is water quality improvement occurring.
What's the biggest reason you hear from farmers as to why they're not doing it?
I think there's a couple major concerns, and I can touch on those. I think there's certain practices that Tom mentioned that are simply unknown to farmers and landowners at this point in time. So there's kind of that learning curve that needs to pick up. And then along with that, funding for sharing of the cost of those practices also needs to come along in that same fashion. So I think knowledge what the practices are, but then also funding to help offset some of the costs.
One of the questions that was brought up in a group that I met with today of students here at BVU had to do with the impact that cities have on Iowa's lakes, streams, and rivers. Mary, if you're looking at that, what does data tell you about the impact from municipalities where we put a lot of fertilizer on our lawns?
Yeah, so if you kind of scale back and you look at Iowa as a whole from the nutrient reduction strategy and some of the research we've done, maybe 95% of the nitrogen's coming from the rural areas. Slightly less is coming from the rural areas from phosphorus, maybe 90%. But it tends to be very spatially diverse. So if we dial into certain watersheds that are more urban, you may see a higher level of nutrients coming from those areas. It tends to be more from wastewater than it is from lawns. We don't see a really strong signature coming from lawns. That lawn is growing. If you're out today and it's 70 degrees, your lawn may be greening up. And so it's sucking up that water. It's pulling those nutrients. We don't see urban streams having the same level of nitrogen and phosphorus issues. But certainly urban areas do have issues that they need to address, and wastewater is one of them. The DNR has been very proactive in looking at measuring what's coming out of those wastewater treatment systems, looking at biological, addressing the waste so that we can reduce those levels. And so I think we definitely need to look at both the rural and urban folks coming together. But if you look at just the sheer magnitude of land use in the state of Iowa, agriculture does dominate that land use. And so it's reasonable to assume that that's where a lot of the effort has to go.
And Art, looking at this from a news standpoint, as far as what kind of issues have been in this part of the state since you started covering water issues in Northwest Iowa?
Well, we've been covering the nitrate issue for 25 years in the Raccoon River, and for a long time, agribusiness denied that it really had any role in this. It was really all coming from the Storm Lake sewer plant, and it isn't, and it wasn't. And so we didn't recognize, I don't think, in the 1980s, how the combination of the intensification of agriculture and the concentration of agriculture and the density of agriculture combined with climate change was going to create this environmental disaster that's creating this dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico the size of New Jersey. And we've only come to really appreciate it, I think, within the last 3 to 5 years and getting our heads around it as a state. And so, as Tom noted, we're way behind. And in storm, you know, Buena Vista County might have one of the highest rates of cover crops in the state, and it's still, I think, 3 to 5% of acres. And, you know, we're spending $1 per acre in Iowa on our nutrient reduction strategy. And the same is true in Ohio, where Lake Erie is fed by nitrate and phosphorus, and where Toledo can't get drinking water. We're spending $1 an acre on $10,000 land. So we're not taking it seriously.
Tom, are we taking it seriously?
I think that, to sort of put that in perspective, I thought that was really interesting when you said $1 per acre. So again, going back to that level of implementation, in the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy, we put together some scenarios of what practices would reach those goals for nitrogen and phosphorus, to include both those in-field, edge-of-field, and land use changes. And one of those included maximum, so most efficient use of nitrogen to the maximum economic return, acreages in cover crops, ag land treated with a wetland or a bioreactor. And then we put some economics on it and used some equal annualized cost. And we saw that, and our estimate was that it would require $36 per acre to get to that, to achieve the goals of the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy. So again, to emphasize, it's possible. But we're going to have to require, or we're going to have to increase the resources for implementation.
Have you seen, Adam, increases in resource implementation?
Yeah, so a good example, we talked about cover crops, and for those in the audience that aren't familiar, cover crops is planting a crop kind of after you harvest your corn or soybean crop in the fall and letting it grow through the spring. I think, Tom, the research shows it's about a 31% reduction in nitrogen leaving those fields. Some of the highest implementation we're seeing in the state is in the Middle Cedar watershed and in Southeast Iowa, and we're getting numbers approaching maybe 20 to 25% of the acres in those watersheds have cover crops. We're probably not quite that high here in this area. But for those practices, the state is investing about half the cost it takes to plant those cover crops, and the farmer or landowner is picking up the rest. So. We're seeing that quite a bit. I think amongst farmers, we realize that there's significant rented land, and in Iowa, upwards of 60% in some areas. And when we talk about cover crops and improving soil health over the years, there needs to be a conversation about landowner contribution to these practices as well, and not just always on the backs of the farmers, because they may not be there next year, whereas these practices have long-term benefits. So. That's what we're looking at, is how can we involve more people in this conversation?
And absent landowners, is there a large population of those in the state?
Yeah, I think the highest percentage county in the state where there's absentee landowners is Wright County, and it's maybe approaching 65 to 70% of the land is owned by someone who's not farming that land.
How does it become less? I mean, I've talked with farmers in the past in different parts of the state where they say they're implementing these projects on their land and their neighbors think they're kind of crazy. I mean, like, is that a common thing that you hear from farmers out in the field?
I think every part of the state's a little different. You know, you get in southern Iowa, maybe eastern Iowa a little bit more, I think those practices are more familiar to people. But I have heard of certain farmers doing these practices out of sight from the road. So, you know, planting cover crops over the hill, wanting to give it a try, but they don't want to really show that they're, you know, on this nutrient reduction path. But they are trying it, but I think you're right. I think there is some hesitation, but again, we need to make these practices more in the norm rather than the exception to the rule.
Why are they hesitant, Mary?
I think they're afraid of losing income. So one of the things that we see...
Because this is a significant investment.
Right.
Sorry to interrupt.
Nobody wants to put money into something and see a decrease in yield. Sometimes we talk about yield. I think we need to talk about profit. So are you making money, not just how much are you growing? But what we see is the notion that, you know, if I see a depressed yield in that first year, that's a scary thing. You're worried about losing money. One of the things I think that's really a challenge is what's good for Northwest Iowa may not play in Southern Iowa and vice versa. We hear that with cover crops, that it's too cold and too wet and we can't get things to germinate. There's a farmer that we've been following in Northwest Iowa who is planting his cover crop in June. And getting it to germinate early, and that he's just taken that on himself, and he's modified his planter. And so we need some innovation from the producers as well to what works in our land, what's working in our area, and to communicate that. So it is, you hear often that the one size all does not fit, but we do grow corn and beans pretty much throughout the state. So we do know that with some innovation, we can make that work in any part of the state.
Tom, what are the differences between the watersheds in the state to the layperson that doesn't know much about one part of the state to the other?
Yeah, so it's again one of the things I really start out with from our students in my natural resources and agriculture classes. We start with landform regions in Iowa, and there was a great book written by Gene Pryor in the Iowa Geological Survey a number of years ago that talks about the different texture of our landscape in Iowa. We get this bad rap, I think, that has been a flyover state and everything's all the same. But all you have to do is, and I challenge them, is I just drove through from Ames through the Des Moines Lobe, really flat, high organic matter soils, the most productive land for agriculture in the world. But in order to be productive, we have to modify the hydrology, oftentimes by artificial subsurface drainage. And I was challenging myself as I got over into Sac City, I noticed, hey, that's a little different. And I was dropping off, and I was into this Northwest Iowa Plains, they call it. So different management. And now the extremes, I'm originally from Dubuque in Northeast Iowa, and that's all that limestone bluffs and all those forests. And Southern Iowa with those rolling hills and more of our grassland agriculture. So we do need to tailor it to the land, and we need to tailor it to each of the landowners' specific objectives as well.
And what kind of differing specific objectives are there? I mean, I imagine it's just a laundry list.
It can be a laundry list. If I have the honor to being asked onto somebody's land to make recommendations, the first thing I ask is, well, what are your objectives? You know, what do you want to achieve? Is wildlife? Is it water quality? Do you like trees? Do you not like trees? And then what sort of equipment do you have? Who's going to do the maintenance on it? How much maintenance is going to be done? Then look at what sort of things need to be done on the land, and then start thinking about what program works best, not start with the program.
Art, I'm curious, have you talked much with farmers in the area that have been doing this kind of work? How much are you getting out in the field and talking with farmers in Buena Vista County?
Well, of course, I talk with farmers in Buena Vista County all the time. I can't say that I get out in the field. My son Tom does most of that. I'm too lazy. But I've been in the field plenty. I'm married to a nice farm girl from Algona. And so I understand what it's like farming in the Des Moines and Raccoon River watersheds. You know, there's the old 80-20 rule. 80% of them want to do the right thing if they can figure out a way to do it. And there's 20% that you got to use a whip on no matter what.
So this is an old saying?
Yeah, 80% of your problems come from 20% of the people. 80% of our soil erosion comes from 20% of the acres. How do you get those 20% under control? I don't know, absent regulation.
And so how do you get those that are not interested to engage, which we can deflect over here? I'm curious, Mary, how do you get people interested or engaged, and some of the questions that you get as you're informing the public of water quality issues in the state?
Well, you know, so we had a program called iWater for about 18 years that trained citizens to do basic water quality testing. And I think that we need every Iowan to be hands on deck to help with understanding our water quality issues. That when you get in the stream, when you start measuring water quality, when you see the things that live there, suddenly it changes your perspective on what needs to happen. And they start talking to their neighbors, and they start talking to communities. And I think that's where it needs to start to some degree, is communities agreeing that they want something to happen, much as we heard about Storm Lake. And there's many communities that are the same way, where locally they saw an issue and they locally came together. So we really need a lot of that to happen. Get informed, get out, get active, learn how to do testing in your water body, and then start having that conversation.
So can you have citizen water testing then? And what do you do with that data?
So the data, first of all, I think the data can be used locally. So if I'm out there, I don't need to have an expensive piece of instrumentation to compare one stream to another if we're all sampling at the same time. And you can use test strips that cost pennies to run. And you can go out there and say, here's the nitrate level in this stream versus that stream. And if it's twice as high or three times or high, 10 times as high, we know we have an issue there and we need to be addressing that. And I've seen lots of examples where citizens have gotten together, written documents and written grants to get money to do things in their watershed. If the citizens don't care, then it doesn't really matter what the agencies want to have happen, because you can't get implementation to happen. So we really need people to talk to their neighbors, to talk to their city council members, their county supervisors, and really get active.
One of the stories that stuck with me early on in covering water quality issues in the state was a farmer in Eagle Grove, and he said that he never thought that he was causing any problems, and had somebody come out and test it for a different group that he was a part of. And he was embarrassed by how high the levels were in his water. I mean, from talking with a lot of people over the last 5 years or so, this is something that a lot of times it seems to me as a reporter that there's just a lack of even knowledge that there's an issue.
I agree. And I think part of it is you think you're doing everything you need to do. You've done what Iowa State has advised you to do. But we have a very leaky system. So, it goes back to how do we hold on to that water and hold on to those nutrients. And I really go back to having a performance-based system. So what is our performance goal of nitrate coming out of a tile line? And then asking farmers to be thinking about achieving that performance standard. It probably isn't going to be the drinking water standard, but it could be less than what is currently coming out. So understanding what is coming out, acknowledging what that level is, and then talking to professionals about how do you cut it in half. And you can cut it in half without really that much pain to your farming operation.
Yeah, so staying on this water topic and tiles, one of the things that we do with farmers across the state is offer tile water monitoring to farmers. And right now, as I was telling Mary before we started, we've started monitoring just these past few weeks as the snow's disappeared, and going out every 2 weeks to farms and pulling water samples from farmers' field tiles and taking that back to our lab at the Iowa Soybean Association, and then sharing those results with the farmers. We do that, I think this year we've got close to 400 different tile lines that we're measuring across the state. Gives us a good feel for what's going on with conservation and different practices, but also gives those farmers some feedback about what they could do, if they need to do anything, where their levels are, and kind of gives them some suggestions as far as how they could improve water quality in their own farms once they have that understanding that they are or aren't part of the problem.
The conversation continues after a break on River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Clay Masters in for Ben Kiefer today. We're listening back to a conversation I moderated at Buena Vista University in Storm Lake about water quality on Monday, April 23rd. My guests were Tom Eisenhart with Iowa State University. Tom is a co-leader of the science team at ISU that developed the science assessment for the nutrient reduction strategy. Art Cullen, editor at the Storm Lake Times. Cullen won a Pulitzer Prize for his editorial writing last year for challenging powerful agricultural interests in Iowa. Also, Mary Skopik, executive director of Iowa Lakeside Laboratory. She's based in Spirit Lake and comes to the University of Iowa from the DNR, where she has held several positions within the Watershed Monitoring and Assessment section, as well as Adam Keel with the Iowa Soybean Association. Keel is operations manager with Iowa Soybeans Environmental Programs and Services Team and works with farmers across the state in implementing water quality practices on their land. We'll pick the conversation back up with Adam Keel. I was talking to him about recent legislation signed by Governor Kim Reynolds that allocates more money for water quality projects in the state.
Well, I think the current legislation does add additional resources to the work through watershed projects and allows more practices to get on the ground. And whether or not monitoring is a part of that is kind of up to the agency that's going to administer the program. I will say that many of the current water quality initiative projects are doing some level of monitoring. And whether or not they choose to share that information is more or less up to them. The information that we collect on the behalf of farmers, we do aggregate that information and share it by region or by watershed so as not to identify one specific person, but still give enough comfort that we know that cover crops are performing, we know that bioreactors do work. We can look at yearly trends or seasonal trends in water quality in the aggregate and still get good information out there. So the debate is about how to do monitoring. I don't think it's whether or not to do monitoring, it's how.
Mary, what do you make of the current legislation that's been signed into law? I guess it's a law now. So.
Yeah, so I think one of the issues is that to some degree we're just using existing money and reallocating that. I would have preferred to have seen the Iowa Water Land Legacy funding happen because I think every day you drink a glass of water. So we need to be thinking about investing every single day in water quality so that it's a sustainable source of funding that we can protect water quality. Largely we've been talking about nutrients and sediment today, but there are a whole host of other things that we need to be thinking about in terms of perhaps pesticides, and we know we've got water quality drinking issues with cyanotoxins and just a number of things. And so we need that sustained level of funding to take care of all these issues. And if we just sort of rob Peter to pay Paul, I don't know that we're going to have that level of funding that we need 25, 30, 40, 50 years from now that I think Iowa would have provided.
Art, from your standpoint, as a journalist and an editorial writer, what do you make of the current bill that's been signed into law, just from your standpoint?
Just mainly what Mary said. It's rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic. And until we come to grips with the fact that we're growing too much corn and we have too many hogs and we have a monoculture that's driven by corn, and we're going to be continuing to ship our soil down the rivers so long as we continue to plant up next to the Raccoon River and into the Raccoon River, and I can show you places where they're planting into the river. And again, it's those 20% who are suffering the most extreme stress. They're younger farmers who feel that they have to plant through the fence row to make that extra 10 bushels of corn. And until we realize that we cannot farm every inch of northern Iowa, we aren't taking this topic seriously. And it's expressed by the amount of money we spend on it, $10 million. That's less than a dollar an acre, actually. And it's expressed by the fact that the agrochemical supply chain was willing to spend any amount of money necessary to defeat that waterworks lawsuit. They spent $1.4 million. So I think it's important for us to recognize that the reason farmers are hesitant to adapt is because they're wrapped into a supply chain that has them by a stranglehold, and they have to chase 200 bushel corn every year in, year out, or they're out of the business. And until we recognize that Monsanto and DowDuPont and the Koch brothers are running this state and running our judicial and political systems, we aren't going to get anywhere.
And I should note here that the Waterworks lawsuit was ultimately thrown out because of a Supreme Court ruling. But I do want to ask Adam, have you seen the landscape change drastically towards monolithic crops? I mean, is this something that you have seen in your time in working with farmers?
I haven't been around a long time to see this major land use change that you're talking about, but there are ebbs and flows with the crops that we plant on the landscape. We saw in certain areas where ethanol plants go in that there's an increase in corn acres and a decrease in soybean acres.
Mary, I'm curious, you work a lot with just the general public. I mean, what are some of the biggest questions you hear from people that aren't water quality nerds?
You know, it's funny because we all spend our lives talking about nutrients, and most people want to know if it's safe to swim. Is the water safe to drink? And by and large, we do have a safe drinking water supply in Iowa. There are things that we need to do, I think, better than what we're doing right now. And many of our beaches are safe to swim in, but we have a few that need to be addressed in terms of bacteria or algal toxins. The blue-green algae can produce a toxin, and it's related to nutrients. But people want to know if they can go outside and not worry about becoming sick. And again, there's a lot that we can do to protect those water bodies with just a few, I think, tweaks to the system.
What else? I mean, as we're talking about water quality issues, I guess, Tom, one of the concerns that I hear a lot when I start talking about hosting these forums is that it's a pretty wide subject. I mean, it's not something that you can boil down into.
It is. It's a wide subject and a very complex subject. And so it's a real challenge. And it's particularly, trust me, it's a real challenge for those of us that are in research and academia to try to give simple answers to complex issues. That's one of the biggest challenges, because it also depends on things like on soils, on hydrology, on climate, like we heard, on different land management. It depends on all of that in any given year.
How do you keep this from being a political issue? Mary, Adam?
Well, I'll jump in first. So I think it's okay if it's a political issue. That's how we make decisions in the state of Iowa, in this country, is we make political policy decisions. So I think it's about having honest debate about where we are and where we need to go, and talking to our elected officials about what you want out of the state. So I don't think we need to shy away from it being political. I think we just need to be able to have honest debate. One of the things that we need to recognize is that while the Gulf of Mexico Hypoxia Task Force drove the nutrient strategy, we have nutrient issues right here at home. And so we don't want to just say that's a Louisiana problem. It does have repercussions here at home. And again, we need to have a dialogue about making sure we don't have high levels of nitrate in our drinking water, and making sure that we can recreate safely. So have a conversation with your elected officials about what you want. I think that's okay.
Adam?
Yeah, I was going to say that there's a certain healthy level of political debate that needs to happen, but I think if we want to really make change, I think change is local. And we work with groups of farmers across the state, farmers and landowners, to develop local watershed plans that use the nutrient reduction strategy as kind of a guide. So the challenge that we face as Iowans is, how do we reduce nitrogen and phosphorus by 45%? Well, should we impose the same kind of guidelines across the whole state, or let small watersheds and groups of farmers decide how they want to get there? And that's what we advocate for, is getting people together locally and talking about solutions, and then having them implement what they see as working for them locally.
In Art's opening comments, he talked about climate change affecting the landscape. You two are spending a lot of time out in fields. According to your research, are you seeing the effects of climate change in Northwest Iowa?
Well, we're still waiting for the ice to leave West Okoboji, so that, yeah, and last year we had the earliest ice out on record. So we're seeing oscillations in climate that are challenging to deal with. So one of the things that I think that we need to think about is, what can we do to make our landscape less vulnerable to very heavy rainfall, to strange rainfall, either a lot of rainfall or no rainfall? And how do we deal with the fact that we are seeing changes in our precipitation patterns? We are definitely seeing that in Northwest Iowa as well, across the state.
Adam?
Yeah, I think the key, like Mary said, is building a landscape that's resilient to dry spells, wet spells, cold, warm. Being able to adjust to these fluxes, whether it's long-term changes or short-term changes, I think that's the approach, is a more resilient landscape.
Anybody else care to take a...
Referring back to Dr. Gene Tackley and Dr. Rick Cruz at Iowa State, Rick Cruz in particular will tell you that we're losing corn yield right now and corn quality, and that we're losing soybean yield and quality right now. We have no choice but to change. We will be forced to change, because The Goddard Space Institute at NASA has done projections showing that in conjunction with the University of Minnesota, has shown that we could lose 50% of our corn yield in the next 75 years because of soil degradation and climate change.
All right. Well, we have some questions that we'll get to here. And if you guys want to step down and ask the questions, there's a microphone here. Gary, where are you, Gary? Do you want to come down here and ask it, or do you want me to do the honors? I can do the. Where are you from, Gary?
Lehigh.
Lehigh, great. Gary says, correct me if I'm wrong, what do city water purification systems do with the nitrates that extract from river water? Mary, you care to take a stab at that?
Well, that's the Des Moines Water Works lawsuit, I think, that we're talking about. So Des Moines does put the nitrate back into the system that they take out, but it's a very, very small fraction of nitrate. And they are actually working on a system that will put it to the wastewater treatment plant. So within, and I don't remember what the timeline is, but in a very short time, all of that nitrate that they take out will go to the wastewater treatment system to be treated and reduced.
Where does that go?
And then that'll go out the stream, and they'll have a permit level so that they'll have to have a certain acceptable level of nitrate that comes out. And that's, DNR's been doing a lot of work to look at what's currently coming out and how we reduce those levels. So part of the nutrient reduction strategy was an urban strategy to look at reducing nitrogen and phosphorus coming out. So they will have permit limits put on them, and they'll have to achieve those limits.
Bill, care to come up and ask a question? That you have microphone right here.
My question is what type of a political or water crisis will it take before we finally develop the political will and the funding to really act to change water in Iowa?
And I should ask Bill too. Are you a part of an organization of any type, or?
No, I'm just a concerned individual.
A concerned individual. Those are great. Who wants to take a stab at this, Tom or?
I'll defer to our Pulitzer Prize-winning.
Okay.
Editor to my left.
I have a feeling I know what he's going to say.
Well, we're just going to be, nature is just going, we have no choice. The stuff we're talking about is piddling at the edges, $10 million a year. Political systems won't matter. And because it's severe enough right now in the estimation of the leading agronomists and climate researchers at Iowa State University, and I don't think Tom would really argue that much, that we are going to significantly have to change the way we practice agriculture to save our soil from climate change. We've gone from 14 inches of topsoil in the Des Moines Lobe down to zero. Zero.
Well, I think that we can have a win-win. I don't think we have to say we have to give up agriculture for good water quality.
That's not what I'm suggesting.
No, and I know you're not saying that, Art. But I do think that, so when you ask the word crisis, I mean, I worked in Department of Natural Resources for many years, and there were plenty of crises. And the problem with crises is that your crisis memory is only so long. And so we fund flooding issues, but then we forgot about the 93 flood, and then we had the 2008 flood. And so I think that we need to get away from the crisis mentality, and I agree that that does motivate people to thinking about what's the best win for Iowa in terms of economic sustainability for agriculture, for water quality sustainability, so that everybody wins. And I don't think that that's a Pollyanna perspective. I think there is actually an everybody wins scenario. We just have to be willing to embrace that.
Here's a question from Jim, and I think I can just paraphrase here. He says the Iowa volunteer sampling program was canceled. What are the projects?
Prospects.
Oh, excuse me. The prospects of regaining. I'm sorry. I should have had you come up and ask the question.
I know what you're asking.
Handwriting is miserable. Yeah, no, I was Iowa water sampler for quite a few years. I got my Iowa water t-shirt on. Worked under Mary for a while. So the program, for those not familiar with it, the DNR provided water testing kits to volunteers who went out and donated their time to monitor water quality in several places. And I've done a couple of places in Storm Lake for years. And so interesting sort of results. I can summarize briefly that the nitrogen coming out of the city is moderate. Nitrogen coming out of the fields is really high. It was double the you know, drinking limit pretty consistently. And those test kits are no longer being provided to volunteers, so the program is basically collapsing. I was wondering if there's any chances of that getting reinstated.
Yeah, it's a good question. Mary, are there prospects of that returning?
I think there are prospects for that returning. The Department of Natural Resources has made a decision for funding that is much less. I think it's $5,000 that they're putting into that program this year. I think that we need to think about a different model that provides maybe different agency support or university support. So I would say stay tuned. I think there will be life after the DNR Iowa Water Program for citizen monitoring entities. And I think that's okay. I think we'll find different homes that work well for the Iowa Water volunteers such as yourself.
Here's another question from Josh. Where are you hiding, Josh? Where are we headed, Josh writes, forecast out 10 years from now if we continue with our current level of mitigation? Tom, I want to ask you that question.
Well, that's a good question. And again, it's going to be dependent upon any sort of changes in land use, any sort of changes in climate and weather. And so there is some uncertainty as to where we're headed. Again, you hate to hear it, but the scientists always answer is it depends.
And we're monitoring.
And we're monitoring.
And we're monitoring.
So this is from Bridget. Where's Bridget? Oh, Bridget. What is the timeline for achieving the 45% reduction for the nutrient reduction strategy in Iowa?
Currently, there are no timelines. There are some goals that are being set at the national level in terms of a percentage reduction by an intermediate step. But currently, the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy was not asked to come up with any, at least the non-point source science assessment, to come up with any goals to achieve that. The role of the non-point source science assessment to say what tools do we have to be able to achieve that and at what cost.
Final question that I have time for here is Val. Where's Val hiding? Val writes, how do we include farmers into the innovation role? And Val, where are you from?
I'm
from Sioux City. We'll throw that to you, Adam.
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I think there's lots of opportunities for farmers and landowners to do research on their own farms about what works for them, both from an agronomic standpoint, but also from an environmental standpoint. I will toot our own horn here a little bit, in the sense that we being the Iowa Soybean Association and the people that we work with, farmers that we work with, we do a lot of on-farm research, whether that's reducing nitrogen rate to see how that impacts the corn crop, or what benefits cover crops have on the following crop from a production standpoint. Those are all things that farmers can try to do on their own land to see what works for them. The practices outlined in the nutrient strategy are a great guide, but not everything is going to work on every parcel of land. So farmers need to do research, figure out what's going to work for them, and then hopefully continue that over time as it's going to prove to work in their production system.
And doing your research is a great segue to the last question that I have. This afternoon, I was invited to speak with some journalism students here at BVU and talk about the journalism arena today a little bit. I'm curious to know, have each of you in conclusion here, give a little advice to the journalism students who are going to be working in newsrooms that are shrinking and are going to have limited resources. And let's start with you, Mary. Or do you want me to deflect?
Start on that side.
Do you want to start there, Tom?
Well, yeah. One of the challenges, again, that I'll go back to is that that again, the science is hard to convey. It's a real challenge. So, and please, my advice is to make sure that, as well as knowing how to communicate it, make sure that you have a strong background on the science itself so that it's communicated accurately and effectively.
Art?
Well, I could deliver a whole semester on that.
You don't need to do that.
Sustainable agriculture where there's no funding. For journalism, there's always going to be a need for facts. And despite what they say, we are still dealing in facts. And just as Tom is. And there will always be a need for somebody to purvey the facts, but we have no idea whatsoever how we're going to pay you to do that.
On that note, Adam?
Yeah, my advice to a journalism student is to try to get on farms if they're interested in water quality or agriculture. Get out on the farms. There's many farmers in the audience, and many of the farmers that I work with are welcoming to journalists and folks that are coming out and have an interest in learning about farming. That's my suggestion. Like we've done together, Clay,
yeah.
Get out on some farms.
Mary, finally?
Well, and I guess my advice would be somewhat similar to Tom. So much like in classic sciences, no longer do we have sort of the straight biologist. You sort of walk between different disciplines, and you have to understand that interdisciplinary world. And so I would recommend that journalism students get minors in other things that maybe you want to cover. So understand that science. Be able to understand the weeds of the science, as it were.
All right, thanks to BVU and our panel.
That's the conversation I hosted April 23rd at Buena Vista University in Storm Lake. My guests were Tom Eisenhart at Iowa State University, Art Cullen, the editor at the Storm Lake Times, Mary Skopik, executive director of Iowa Lakeside Laboratory in Spirit Lake, and Adam Keel with the Iowa Soybean Association. River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Today's episode was engineered by John Pemble. A special thanks to Amy O'Shaughnessy of our membership department for organizing this event. I'm Clay Masters. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. ¶¶